Hey, Truck Roy here. We're on the Riding Shotgun Show and on Horace's MP3 broadcast. We just got back from a conference, Horace, and it was a pretty big deal for me. I'd never been to a conference quite like that before.
Well, I have nothing to compare it to, so I wouldn't. I've never been to anything quite like it. So I've never been to any Stormfront conferences before. I've never been in anything quite like it to have anything to even compare it to. But it was pretty interesting, to say the least.
Yeah. Now, you weren't in your typical element, because usually you've got a little bit different audience on your podcast there. Sure. But you had some old time white nationalists there, as well as, I'd say, probably about half the people were people who came there because of your podcast to see you or to see Bob Whitaker. And that was a little different crowd, a little bit younger, and the sort of people that I don't usually see at a white nationalist conference. And they were very interactive, especially in the seminar part at the end.
Well, yeah, certainly. You never know what to expect when you set up something like this. I didn't know what to expect from our enemy, but of course, if I were to bet ahead of time, I didn't think they'd show up at all, because that's generally what you do with a consistent message: is you ignore it, you forget about it, you do everything possible to not give it exposure, which is kind of interesting. It's kind of funny, but it had an interesting audience, and yeah, it was interactive. I'm trying to recall everything going on. It was the Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar part went for, well over an hour and a half, I'm guessing.
Time flies when you're up there on stage or up there in the front, but I could have gone for another hour and probably not even noticed it. But it was the end of the day, and I think a lot of people were had sat through quite a few speeches, and I know Bob Whitaker was kind of antsy. He looked like he was about done, but once we got rolling, it was really firing on all cylinders there. And you mentioned the fact that the enemy kind of ignored this thing. We kind of took precautions in case they came after us, like they have in other kind of white
every
nationalists
other time in history.
Right. But it's humorous to me to see the enemy caught in these horns of dilemma here. Because they can either ignore the consistent message, that's probably the safest bet, or they can try to engage it, and then they've completely lost anyway. So it's nice to have them on the defensive.
Well, they can't control the message.
Right.
What they've seen with the Soviet Union is they lost control of the message and it collapsed. They didn't know what hit them. And the catalyst there, of course, was fax machines. I never really went into that in my podcast, but that was a catalyst. They understand what happened in Eastern Europe when the Soros foundations took over, and that was done with copying machines. The Soviet Union obviously was a lot bigger deal. They've seen what happens when the Palestinians in this new media, the little group of Palestinians, they are dominant on but they have seen, when it comes to Palestinians, they've seen what's happened with the new media. You can lose control of the message and use this media to leverage your opponent's size and weight against them. That's what the Palestinians have done. Even surprisingly enough, a lot on American college campuses. And let's face it, American college campuses are, you're sitting underneath the Jewish run media. And they've been able to do this very successfully, so they don't want to fool with this stuff at all. And they're going forward with their crazy plan, and they've unveiled part two. I went into my podcast on part one, and part two is shaping up, and it has to do with the containment strategy of China. They're very busy across the planet, if you haven't noticed. They're just pretty much ignoring us.
Yeah, and I think they've got their hands full trying to put out other fires. College campuses have started to become very unfriendly towards the Jews.
My goodness, yes.
It's funny. I hear David Duke talking about the Jews, and boy, he's gotten pegged six ways to Sunday. But, he's not a lone voice anymore. It seems like everybody I run into is talking about the Federal Reserve or talking about Hollywood, this and that. And, I've heard you say on your podcast that you expect the Jews to go down in the first round, and it's really starting to look that way.
Well, you never know until it happens, but they got problems. This whole entire apparatus at the top of what I call Anglosphere, that goes for the UK, that goes for different elements in America, and it would definitely include the Jews all over Anglosphere. You can't talk about it without talking about what I call the Jew rabbits on my show. And you got Australia. They got problems, the whole entire top, that have bit into this social engineering program that's targeted at white children and only white children, and that is genocide. You know, they got problems. They got huge problems. Toward the end, I'll talk about one of the big things that's shaping up. One of the big challenges they have.
Okay, I want to get back to this conference
here,
but
before
we do, I'd like a quick bit of speculation from you, because I really enjoy your analysis of trends and the way certain events seem to be going in directions. And I'm absolutely convinced that we're entering a revolutionary period. Now, what that means, I'm not sure. You know, there's a lot of unknowns out there, but I'm figuring that we're probably going to go to more authoritarian sort of governments here. I mean, it seems like in times of trouble, people are always looking for that strong leader. And, do you see that, in the United States? Or?
In the short term, you're going to have what's shaping up right now is that they're going – the trend is toward a very, very large war. And it's shaped around Iran and the Chinese containment strategy. We already know what their containment strategy is now with China. It's in Africa. It's cutting off their natural resources in Libya, Africa, and the Horn of Africa. Just this morning, it was revealed through memos and whatnot that the U.S. is building massive numbers of drone bases in Africa. And I don't know what massive numbers means, but we know about them being in Djibouti. Djibouti is near Ethiopia, the Horn of Africa. We know that they're flying them into Libya, and these are drone bases, hunter-killer drones for quote-unquote al-Qaeda. And they're also Seychelles. Seychelles is out in the Indian Ocean. And if you were to look at a map of this, you're going to see straight above it is India and straight over is China. They're blocking their access to natural resources. This is their containment strategy for China. And they'll look to kill two birds with one stone in Iran. And if they take out Iran, China is going to be deprived of a lot of natural resources. Now, supposedly, I would look for this to be an epic fail. But they're going to roll this into something. This has to do with their new world order and has to do with something big, in my opinion. I could be wrong, but this all is shaping up. Everything's shaping up into these conflicts. Now, as far as what they plan on doing right after that, I've talked on my show a great deal. The plans that I could spend hours and hours on the different groups and the plans they've had lately. It's really ridiculous.
Right.
And all you have to do is start doing your own homework and realize they got something planned. Something big. Now, I don't know what type of authoritarian or – I don't think anything they do is going to work.
Well, and I'm not just talking about the enemy. I think that, you know, I really cannot say who's going to come out on top in this thing in the next 10 years, because there's a lot of parties. You know, when you get into a revolutionary situation, it's kind of a free-for-all.
Well, you're definitely in a revolutionary situation for one historic fact. Anytime you have a new form of communication comes out, it doesn't matter whether it's a copy machine episode in Eastern Europe, which is a mini episode, the fax machine, which caused the collapse of the Soviet Union, it's one of the catalysts, the printing press. You've had the internet out, what I talked about, 15 to 20 years, you're at the 17-year point. If we say 1995, the internet came out, it's a tough call. What day did it come out actually for the public? But on AOL, they displayed the World Wide Web, and I remember 95, 96, you're at 2000, coming into 2012. So you're coming in that 17-year point. You're coming into a revolutionary time frame. It takes 15 to 20 years to brainwash a country, brainwash people, and takes 15 to 20 years to start undoing all that with some type of new media or all new textbooks and everything else. And the internet is global. The internet has set off so many little revolutions. The internet, there's so much going on. Every group has their own website. Every group wants their own territory. Every group, it's like everyone wants their own stuff.
Well,
you know,
it's
made the world bigger. It's made the world bigger and easier to access, but at the same time, very small.
Yeah, and the marketplace of ideas, I think, has grown a bit. And there's a lot more information out there. But, you know, there's another factor having to do with the mentality of the establishment that, to me, points towards a revolutionary situation. Because you can go back to, like, the French Revolution and Marie Antoinette, people telling her, well, the people are starving, you know, they don't have any bread, and she says, well, let them eat cake. Or you can go to Soviet Union before it collapsed, and, you know, the party line, the official communist line was so disconnected from any reality that it was a joke.
And yeah, you have the elite right now in several different areas of the planet totally disconnected from
completely.
Their populations. Whether it be the House of Saud in Saudi Arabia or the Anglo-American elite, could you have another French Revolution in America? Well, there are some parties that think so.
Well, you know,
it just depends.
I don't know how this is going to go. I mean, I don't even know where to start speculating. But I do know that, like, in French, for example, you know, you've made the analogy before, you know, that the French rabbits are sitting up there, don't dirty my fur, as they look at the Muslim hordes eating up Paris.
Yeah.
And here in America, you have a guy like Obama who's sitting up there fighting the ghost of Jim Crow past or whatever, and all his policies and his rhetoric is so disconnected. It might have been slightly relevant in 1960, but so disconnected from the reality that everybody's living in today. That points towards a revolutionary situation where all faith is lost in the establishment.
Well, you see, yeah, that certainly has happened. But the establishment in this instance has an edge. They know there's big trouble. The big trouble, of course, revolves around finance. There's a lot of internal financial problems, even in somewhere like China. And in America, they are just mounting up. You can see it mounting up. You hear it, but it's not all making the news. It's not all making the economic statistics. I think the economic statistics in America now reminds me of the Soviet Union before it collapsed. But the elite that we're talking about, Jew and Gentile alike, they know everything I just laid out. They're not – I can't imagine them letting it go to that, but there has been times when they have screwed up and dropped the ball. In other words, they're going to have to pull something big.
Yeah, somebody painting themselves into a corner. I mean, this is not going well.
Yes. Oh, my goodness, yes.
All right, let's get back to the conference here. You know, when I showed up down there, the facilities were much nicer than I expected. I figured we'd be meeting in a warehouse somewhere that, you know, to stay off the radar. But great facility, great place. And, you know, it was a real pleasure to meet guys like Bob Whitaker and yourself, who I'd never actually met before in person. What was your impressions of Whitaker when you first come across the guy?
Well, you see, Bob Whitaker did the press conferences for these different coalitions he put together. The famous one would be in the busing, the crosstown busing in places like South Side of Chicago, and Boston, the South end. He's an honorary Southie in Boston. And what Bob likes the white working classes. That's what he likes working around. That's what he's famous for building coalitions around, usually against the Department of Education. So I already knew all about that. I knew what he likes. He wore a suit and tie and everything else in Washington, but he doesn't do that anymore. He only wears basically undercover lover t-shirts. As most people found out, he was going to wear it at the conference, but they wouldn't let him. They didn't put on a jacket. But he hasn't worn suits in years. He's very down to earth. He's not what you – a lot of people assume that he is what they call the suit and tie races, the suit and tie set, like the maybe the Jarrett Taylors, who, you know, look very diplomatic and are very who's the guy that spoke? He gave one of the best speeches I've ever heard, Sam Dixon. Along that set, he's not in that set at all. I would call them the more suit and tie diplomatic set. He's more like what I would call, let's pull up a chair and talk to the country boys or talk to the truck drivers in Detroit or something like that. That's the type of guy he is. So I already knew what it was like because I've you know, although we never shook hands or anything like that, I know quite a bit about him.
Well, no, I'm a pretty simple guy, and I generally get my impressions from people on people from my face-to-face contacts with them.
Sure.
I'm good at reading people that way, not so much you know, over the internet.
Most people
or anything.
Are surprised by Bob.
Yeah, you know, my first impression is, okay, I got to the event, and I'd driven all night so that my kid could sleep in the car seat and not wake up. And I had been up all the day before, so I'm a bit pooped, and I can't get into my hotel room yet. So I'm sleeping in my car, and this guy pulls up next to me and sets off the alarm on his car and wakes me up. And I look over, and there's this disheveled old man, and I'm like, you know, he's like, hey, I didn't set off your car alarm, and doesn't even realize it's his own, you know. And I'm like, who's this guy? And I get up and I start talking to him for a minute. I said, "You don't happen to be Bob Whitaker, do you?" And you know, like I said, he's not.
Was he wearing my T-shirt then?
No, he was. I can't remember what he was wearing.
Wearing that one White Rabbit T-shirt because when I first saw him, he had on the T-shirt, but I already knew what he looked like, and I already knew he was a lot older than most of those pitchers. Bob's old, man.
He's old. He's old, and he was looking a little disheveled and disoriented. But
he's
only
a few years away from being 80. I think he's 75 or something.
No kidding.
He's 75 years older. He's old.
Yeah, he is.
He's been through a lot.
Yeah, but, you know, he has a certain intensity about him in his eyes. And, you know.
The funniest part, hopefully they put it in the they cut out the video and have everything to MP3. For the audience, you'll hear Truck Roy speak. You'll hear me speak. I'm talking basically to a white audience, audience that is racially minded. You have to keep that in mind, and it'll be pretty interesting because I went on a few different paths, I think. But Bob speaks too, and Bob gets frustrated at some of the questions that and the question and answers because the white nationalists are asking questions that they normally would answer. Paleo conservatives are asking questions they normally would ask, and Bob stands up and he says, "You know, if you can't breathe, you need air."
Well, and that's, you know, we should elaborate on that a little bit because, you know, a lot of times Bob says things that are blindingly obvious, but they can seem cryptic to a lot of people out there that, you know, don't really follow his thinking. And, you know, what he's saying there is, you know, you can talk about what kind of nation you'd want to have or what kind of government you'd like or, you know, you have libertarian leanings or whatever. But, you know, the only thing that matters if you're being genocided is to stop the genocide. You know, he gave that example. If you can't get air, the only thing that matters is getting that next breath. And we need to focus on that because, you know, our people are taking real-world losses every day. It's hurting white children.
Sure,
And so we got to focus on the task immediately ahead of us there and stay on message. You know, I think he said that too when we were talking up there and answering some questions, and I heard him in the back of the room saying, "Stay on message." But
Well, there was normal banter in the question and answer, and of course they tried to, you know, it's just normal stuff. Like, why do that and not this? It's just normal stuff. A lot of people don't understand how consistent messages work, and I tried explaining quite a bit of it, and I don't know, some really liked what I did or the approach I took. I didn't hear any complaints.
I want to talk about your little address here in a second, but I when we went into this conference here, I wasn't sure exactly what role you and I were going to play in between the speeches and whatnot, but I kind of came up with an idea, something I'd tried out in the past a little bit, which is taking advantage of the power of repetition. And having people say the talking points back several times. And I think it works. It's dead simple, but it really, really works. And I think that was kind of one of my key thoughts about communicating to people and the way it worked at that conference is just repeating certain talking points. And, of course, Whitaker's talking points are called the mantra.
Yeah, for those that you might not hear this in the MP3s, but Truck went up there in between and made people stand up and say anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white three times and stuff like that. It was great. I only did one of those little intermissions. I can't even remember what I said, but
I do. I remember what you said. In your opinion.
Yeah.
In your opinion.
In your opinion, yeah. But Truck Roy did several of them. It definitely made the point.
Right. I mean, I'm not a silver tongue speaker, so, you know, I stick to the basics. And lately, you know, like I've admitted many times, it took me 2 years to understand what Whitaker was saying in his mantra. And there's a lot, to me, as I consider myself intelligent. I consider myself pretty intelligent, but I also am smart enough to know when people are smarter than me. And that was one of the things that excited me the most about going to this conference is there were two people there that I knew were more intelligent than me. One was Horace and one was Bob Whitaker. And I love spending time around people who are a little bit quicker than me because, if you're around people who are smarter than you, you can get smarter. If you're around stupider people than you, you may get stupider. But, Whitaker has written this mantra, and as simple as it is, it's what, 222 words?
Yep.
Yeah, and as simple as that is, the more I read it, the more I take on Whitaker's mindset. And I got a printer here finally, and I printed it out, and you know, I repeat it several times a day, you know, at work, because it helps me stay on message. And because there's so many distractions out there, you know, you start talking about race and people want to talk about their cousin who was in the KKK or something, you know. And
there's nothing wrong with that, but understanding what it is and how it works is very important. But Bob always says, if everyone asks, well, describe your writing, describe how you think, and he would just, you know, read the mantra, because it's all in there, you know.
You know, recently I was talking to a mutual acquaintance of ours, and he was asking me how to respond to certain friends of his that were asking him about racial stuff, and I pondered it for a long time, and I thought of a lot of different ways to phrase things, and I ultimately ended up emailing him the mantra, because, you know, I couldn't do any better than that. That says it all right there. And
Yeah, you can keep it simple. The mantra is custom tuned for everything online. I use a lot of short ones in person, but the ideal is to point out the objective truth over and over and over again. The type of society we're in is identical to the Soviet Union, in so much that the Soviet Union was the emperor and he had no clothes. Everyone knew he didn't have clothes, but you got to do that. You got to bring that to bear on the society with a consistent message. And then all of a sudden, one morning, he will have no clothes, and the whole thing comes tumbling down. It's kind of interesting. Sound is very insidious like that.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting that all around us, we can see the walls beginning to crumble. We, you know, obviously, financially, you'd have to be pretty blind.
Things always usually go at once. We're just doing our part to help them.
Right. And also, you know, it's never over. You know, it's never – our enemy doesn't quit. This is I think as white rabbits, as you'd say, we've been pretty prosperous for quite a few decades, several generations here. And I think we get in the mentality that, okay, we've accomplished and now we can sit back. You know, these sort of struggles are never, ever, ever over. A lot of these problems that we face are internal to our people, and, you know, rust never sleeps. And so, you know, there's never a point where you can stop thinking or when you can take your eye off the ball. You know, people like you and
even if our enemy disappeared, even if we were on an all-white planet, like, who knows, maybe we were on an all-white planet one day, eventually you're going to have an enemy show up.
Sure.
No one's just going to sit back and you know. Things go through cycles. We're at the end of a big cycle.
Right. And you know, a lot of the troubles we face are due to a demoralized population. And you don't necessarily have to have your enemy controlling the media to get demoralized. You know, problems can erupt internally. And so whether it's through religion or whatever, you've got to find a way to keep your people on that upward path. And that struggle, you know, success has been our biggest trouble going back to the Greeks. I mean, what destroyed the Spartans? Well, they conquered the Athenians. They came into too much wealth. They didn't know how to handle it, and it wrecked their Spartan society. So that's always, you know, a lot of these things we struggle against are timeless, and that's why I think in your show you can go back to mysticism and stuff going back thousands of years ago, and it's relevant and timely today.
Well, I think what's interesting enough is when you learn about our enemy, you learn that they've been there a long time. In fact, the Peloponnesian Wars, the war between, I believe I have that right, between ancient Sparta and Athens. They were there. They were active. The banksters were there, interesting enough. So we've had a lot of challenges. We're facing an enemy that has been there a long, long time in one form. They might change the isterisms, but the banksters are always there. They're always at our throats. That there's someone I would like to get rid of permanently. The bankster class. The private central banks. They are a disease on our race. People, you know, the so-called developing world always talks about the private central banks, and they hate them. There's a reason for that. They screw them over. But if there's one race that's been abused by these private central banks, when you understand how far this goes back, our race would sit probably at the top, because it's probably held us back for by, we might be 1,000 years behind in our evolution from these things. They're just so backwards. But that is a totally another podcast.
Now, before we switch back to the conference there, I want to get your thoughts, your geopolitical analysis real quick on this situation in China, because what I'm hearing over there is that the Chinese banking system is coming apart. Well, at least I guess what they call Chinese banking is more like mobsters lending money. It's not.
Well, no. What happens is you have a Chinese have a public central bank that issues currency against GDP as a receipt against GDP. They issue a true currency, one of the only ones to develop post World War II Nazi Germany. The ones before Nazi Germany would have been the founding fathers in colonial script.
Right. So
the Chinese issue a true currency as a receipt against GDP. Now, the world reserve currency is the dollar, which the dollar is the premier private central bank. It's just that. It's a Federal Reserve note. It's a note. It's a debt instrument. The problem with debt instruments and private banks, a private central bank, is the same problem with any private bank. The private bank can only loan the principal. It has no way to deal with the interest, so the interest has to grow. And because of the compound nature of interest, the interest on the notes will always far surpass the amount of notes in circulation. It's a system based on scarcity, basically.
Yeah, I'm fair.
It's dead in game. But anyways, what the Chinese have done is they've brought out something different. They've done very well with it. But there are a tremendous amount of dislocations. I mean, they're not Germans.
Well, no, I know there's a tremendous amount of corruption in China. I mean, it's endemic.
Well, the problem comes into is, one, you have a tremendous amount of counterfeiting going on because the elites that want the private central banks around the world, namely Anglo-American, are undermining it every way they can. Just because it's the most dominant public central bank maybe in the history of the world. So they're undermining it. And also there are dislocations internal to China. You can't grow like that without having dislocations. And what's happened is there's different type of small loan rackets.
That's what I'm talking about.
It's small loan rackets.
And loan rackets
are generally, I'm not sure what's all behind them. I don't have a full analysis, but there's a small loan racket and it's become quite a bubble. And you have these small loans going out to all these small businesses, and it looks to be a pretty big disaster that the Chinese are going to try to get their handle on. But
well, because what I've been hearing on the internet is that their CEOs over there in China, they're fleeing the country because they're over leveraged, and with this little recession here in the United States, they're basically bankrupt.
Well, that is the problem. They've tied everything to America. A lot of people think, you know, China is going to be a bigger debacle than Japan. China may have to go to war. They may try to go to war. They're trying to do a free trade deal with the Russians and that big SCO alliance they have, that big defensive line. They're also talking about defensive shield. But they are heavily dependent on their relationship with Russia, believe it or not. They're heavily dependent on outside energy. The Chinese miracle probably won't be a miracle for very long. Little Red Dragon's probably going to get spanked, but we'll have to wait and see.
You know, also just from a demographics, you know, we talk about the low birth rates over here in America and how that spells, you know, big trouble with aging white baby boomers and then a non-white working class coming up trying to support that. Obviously, third world population cannot support a first world debt load. But no. Over there in China with their one China policy, they also have that really bad demographic time bomb.
Yeah, the smart ones, and Bob has talked about this, probably 15, 20 years, that China will just implode population-wise. The smartest ones I know all say the same thing about China. And it's going to be the direct opposite of what we think. We always think these non-white groups are going to take over the world. They don't want to. They don't want to do that. China's trying to survive this storm because they are so tied to America export-wise that as America went into the brink, as America started going into what looks to be a financial spiral, you know, eventually this rising third world population in America is going to eventually end up in the infrastructure. We're having all kinds of problems come up, and everything's linked to race. Everything is. But anyways, as America went into the brink post 2008, more and more problems in China became exposed. You know, when everyone's growing fast and China can take advantage of that, they're doing quite well. But now, of course, you've got to survive the first storm, and this storm looks to be big and deep, and it's global. So,
Yeah, and I think we could probably go on for an hour on the financial stuff. It's fascinating to me. But to get back to this conference here, now you finally
conferences in China. It's cool.
Yeah. But you know, well, I'll tell you another story in a second here. But when we got down to the end of the conference, there, you finally got up and spoke, and it went extremely well. I think everybody there was unsure of how Horace, the internet phenomenon, would come off in real life because, you know, nobody had ever heard you speak live. And I can remember in your first podcast saying, "You will never hear me. You will never see me." And,
yeah, well, I was only planning on doing 6 podcasts then.
Right.
Of course, now you got to hear me and see me. So.
Right. But, you know, I mean...
Which is kind of funny. The Australians said that, too, and say, "Horace, we weren't supposed to ever hear you or see you." I'm like, yeah, well, if I would have had my way, that probably would have been the truth. But, you know, these things happen.
Well, I think it was a moment where it was kind of one of those defining moments because everybody else had already spoke. And you know, we'd heard David Duke speak before. Sam Dixon, like you said, he did a phenomenal job, but... we knew what to expect from all those guys, and then you stepped up there, and probably significantly younger than most of those other guys, and definitely a different style, a different cadence to your way of speaking there, and you just had everybody almost hypnotized, you know. And
I like hearing hypnotized, but I can't even I didn't know the format. It was very unusual because a conference like this had never really been done for the audience members. Most of the Stormfront conferences, most of the conferences have a formal line of speakers and intermissions and lunch. While we had like lunch, which was actually a really good lunch, we had everything seem formal, but the way that the things went, it was it's just different. It was a practical politics conference. It was not a normal conference in the traditional sense.
No, it wasn't. And I know Mr. Black, Derek and Don Black, are obviously influential in setting it up. He told me afterwards that he's been doing these conferences and seminars and AMRIN and all that for 30, 40 years, and this was definitely the best event he'd ever gone to. And I think the reason why is because, you know, guys like Mr. Black, they really are revolutionaries that want to win. And, you know, maybe they didn't have all the pieces of you know, the tactics that maybe their tactics 30 years ago were effective then, but you know, our stuff, I think, with Bob Whitaker's mantra and everything, is geared for right here, right now. As you say, the time is right on the calendar. And when you spoke, I think everybody understood that. Everybody understood that this is the time to get on board with this message. And I think everybody walked out of there. Hopefully with something that they can use in their everyday life and fired up and ready to do that. Now,
I've tuned into the Don Black show more than a few times. He had in the last week, he had me on. For the audience members that don't know, you can go to my website. I actually have a link up right at the top of the podcast to the Don and Derek Black show where I actually was interviewed last Friday. You can go there and listen to it. But I've heard after that, I've tuned in quite a number of times. And this morning he was talking about white genocide, and he was basically, it was Don Black, and he got a lot of different people got the message, understand what we're doing, understand why we're doing it. I tried to do it from a different perspective that they could understand really easy, and the analogy to the Soviet Union.
Yeah, and I have the opportunity to be on that show fairly regularly. And
Every day,
right? Just about every day, and you know,
for at least 15 minutes or a half an hour.
Well, you know, sometimes I say 5 words, sometimes I talk for a half an hour. But one point that, you know, people are picking up that white genocide talking point. But there's a point I wanted to make on the show, and I think it's probably timely to make it here too. Is that, you know, the white genocide charge is not rhetoric. And so we've got to be careful how we use that term, because I'm starting to hear people overuse it for things that aren't white genocide. For example, affirmative action is not white genocide. It's anti-white. No, it's discriminatory.
Well, every policy they do usually goes to our death on some level. It's all by and large designed from a social engineering perspective that's targeting us to wipe us out.
Well, agreed, but you know, the white genocide charge is very specific. It's massive non-white immigration into only white nations, and then plus the assimilation the forced assimilation, and that equals genocide. There's a lot of auxiliary things culturally to what they're doing to demoralize us and, you know, discriminate, you know, with affirmative action and so on and so forth. But that charge is very, very specific. You know, it's massive non-white immigration plus assimilation equals white genocide.
And the white countries and only white countries.
Right. And I don't ever want to try – I don't – we'll make sure that term is not diluted by using it rhetorically, because it's deadly to the opposition.
Well, yeah, you don't want to – well, there's two different ways to look at it. There's two different ways to look at it. There's two different philosophies. Typically, we try to be too perfect in everything, Truck.
Yeah.
Imagine our enemies say, you know what? We want to make sure we use the charge of racism and anti-Semitism only where it's legitimate.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
They shove it down our throats. I mean, if you look at someone sideways in an airport, it's racist. If you so much as sneeze near a Jew, it's anti. It's just I used to think in those terms, but I say just get the stuff out there. Anytime I see something remotely anti-white, I'm calling it anti-white. Why? Because that's what works.
Right. Right.
But so I don't know. It really depends. Understanding that affirmative action is by and large part of a system designed to kill white rabbits is, well, that's true.
Right.
It's true. It's all part of white genocide. But yeah, you want to be a little tactful with your use of it. But then again, and seeing what works out there and seeing what our enemy's been able to do with modern media and charging simple words like racism until the cows come home, and I don't know. I don't think you can ever say something too much.
Well, really, definitely repetition is.
You'll definitely drive your friends and neighbors crazy. You'll drive white nationalists crazy. They don't like – a lot of them don't like consistent messages and stuff.
Well, they don't like using somebody else's words.
There's nothing intellectual in it. Well, there are some of them like doing stuff that works. Some of them are just resistant.
Well, you know, they're a very independent, logical group who likes to think for themselves, and they don't like using other people's words or other
people's. There's nothing logical in sound. That's the problem. Sound knocks out all critical thinking. Sound does this time and time again. I mean, everyone listening has been in a heated fight with a loved one just because they said something. Critical thinking goes right out the window, and you're at their throats. You might regret it later. But that's sound overcomes all that. And that's one of the things I talk about in the – I think I did. Did I talk about sound in the –
You did very effectively. For your average listener out there –
and it's a lack – the average white nationalist, like the average white person actually is very undereducated on the physics of sound and what the elites know about sound. We can't see it, so we don't take it seriously. Like, Truck, you're going to be loading this up on Audacity so you can put it into an MP3. And when you load it up on Audacity, you're going to see the sound. You're going to see the pressure waves. But that's what sound is. It's a pressure wave. We can't see it, but we can feel it. And that's what you feel when you, you're sitting in the pew and at a church musical on Christmas Eve and Oh Holy Night comes on and you get goosebumps because you remember back when you were a child, you heard it like that. You heard that particular tune. Sound is very, very ephemeral when it comes to the power of sound. But it's just a pressure wave, and that's exactly where you get the term pressure from below, and that's what a consistent message delivers. And it is physics. There is physics behind how the Soviet Union was brought down, and there's a physics behind what we are doing, believe it or not.
You know, this is very interesting to me because right now I'm studying to get my ham radio license, and I'm probably going to be taking it in the next couple of weeks here. And I'm
I'll tell you a story most people don't know. The guy that came up with White Rabbit Radio is a ham radio operator, and he was the one that put up one of the first sites with my stuff on it. It was one of the home sites. It was like home computer sites with the first 5 to 6 podcasts on it. And one of them came up with White Rabbit Radio, and that's how I got that. So it's kind of interesting. But Bob is big into ham radio as well.
It's interesting to me, you know, the way you talk about the resonance of different things and stuff, because these are scientific concepts that I'm really just starting to get my mind around and studying for ham radio. And everything has a resonance.
Everything in the universe has a frequency at which it'll readily vibrate.
Right.
And that's why you can pretty much even the system we're in. The system we're in is not controlled with guns or bullets. That's a myth. It's controlled by controlling the message. It's controlled by sound. Every listener has been controlled their whole entire life by sound. Most every big fight you've been in was over someone saying something to you. Most of the big decisions in your life were over sound. When that boy asked you, "Will you marry me?" you got sucked into that one. Everything revolves around sound, especially in this particular system. I mean, it's a prison without walls, without bars, but it has pressure waves holding everybody in. And the whole idea at the top, to get at the top of the system, to control it, you have to control the message.
Right.
That's it.
Right,
and
right.
If our enemy loses control of the message in somewhere like America, you lose everything. But to lose control of the message, you have to have a competing message. You have to be on that competing message. You have to have terminology. You have to be able to impose that terminology through that message. It's a little process.
Right, right. Yeah, it's amazing because what I've heard
is these are things that I actually went into. I remember going into that in quite a bit of detail in the particular talk I gave at the conference.
Right, and you went over this stuff in some of your earlier podcasts, which I've listened to several times. And, you know, at first I thought, well, you're kind of crossing up, fantastic elements or imaginative elements of sound with the scientific ones. But the more I read about this and study up on it, our bodies are very strong grounds for electricity, and electricity moves at hertz, 60 hertz or whatever, which basically a sound wave or a radio wave in a cable or a wire is electricity. And all these concepts are tied together between electricity, sound, heat. Radio waves move at the speed of light, and we still don't have a firm grasp on what light is and how these different.
Oh yeah, it's all fascinating physics, but there is a physics behind sound. Sound right now they're blinding Somali pirates. Since I was talking about Seychelles and off the coast of Somalia, and they're using drones to bomb Somalia. They're blinding Somali pirates with pressure waves with sound. You've heard about these sound weapons where they let off a sound and it just makes everyone's ears bleed or stuff like that.
Or makes them nauseous.
They have ones that'll make you sick. They have pressure waves. That's all sound is. Right now, my voice is producing a pressure wave. They have pressure waves that can actually knock out eyesight in a human temporarily, which is pretty effective weapon against Somali pirates. They're using that, but they can be very destructive as well as beautiful.
Yeah, and you can control,
and as well as irritating.
Right, right, and people can be controlled by a sound, especially if they can't get away from it. And of course, that's what we aim to do, is keep shoving the truth in front of people's face until they snap out of that trance.
Hypnotize them with the truth.
Or
a little contradiction there.
Yeah, or bring them out of their trance with the truth. But so if you have your average listener listening to this who maybe tunes in for your alternative news and research type stuff, what would you say to them if they were considering showing up at one of these conference type things? What should they expect? Would it be a friendly environment for them? Or?
Well, there were two or three there, and they liked it. Yeah, it was very friendly, very unique. You've got people from all over the world. There wasn't a big turnout from Europe and Australia and stuff like that. If there might have been, had they given notice, had it been more notice. But it was very interesting group, very very different,
very diverse,
very diverse age wise, white diversity, the kind of diversity we like.
Right, right. Well, and
it was very diverse age wise. It was very unique, I guess. I'm going from what Dr. David Duke had told me. He said it was very unique, and it was not like a conference he had been to. Don Black said the same thing, and they've been to every conference there is. So, I've never been to anything like it before. Like Noah Amron meetings, none of the American Renaissance. I've never been to anything quite like it before. But it was unique. It was a time to meet people. One of the interesting. Times you would have to meet a lot of people and to talk to them off record and so on and so forth.
Right, and I did notice that there were a few of your listeners that showed up there, and then of course we had the local guys who were kind of doing security there. And by the end of the day, it appeared that our opposition was not going to show up and cause us any problems. During our question and answer period, one of the security guys started asking questions about talking points and whatnot. To me, that was the best part when you just have your average Joe's saying, "Hey, I can use this stuff."
Yeah, they can. Anyone can use it. as long as you can defend yourself, as long as you can open your mouth, you can participate in some way. Or you can, as long as you don't even have to open your mouth, you can copy and paste online and participate. You can participate. It's got to be simple enough so that a 5-year-old or 7-year-old, what I say is it's got to be simple enough so that a 7-year-old German can do it and a 10-year-old little girl sitting in London can do it. And as well as a, you know, an 8-year-old sitting in America can all do it. If they can all do it and all be fine with it, well, then you got a good message. But it has to be that simple. It has to be, it has to be for it to be effective.
Right. And, you know, I think whether you're talking about some, you know, academic type from a university with a ponytail, or you're talking about some young tough guy or whatever, I think everybody understands if you're going to
– Young tough guy.
Yeah. Well, and there were a few of them there. I mean, there was,
yeah, there were. There were some very big boys there.
Yeah,
some of these kids are big,
and I think, you know, but no matter what your background is or whatever, and there were people of very different backgrounds there. I think we all understand, yeah, when you're going against your enemy verbally, you can't go on the defensive. You have to stay on the offensive, and I think that's where our talking points go over, because I know as we're talking, obviously a lot of people who have approached things from a pro-white perspective are aware that they're going to get called racist. And so a lot of them have put in a great deal of thought into how they're going to respond to that, and they've responded to it a lot of different ways, and they're all hunting for one that works. And of course, the talking point we use is, you're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-racist is a code word for anti-white. And
yeah, I prefer the "in your opinion I'm a racist, you're just saying that because I'm white." Anti-racist is just a code word for anti-white. Derek Black does the Truck Roy version, the version Truck Roy did. Would you go ahead and say that again, Truck?
Well, if somebody suggests you're racist, asks if you're racist, you say, "You're just saying that. You're just asking that because I'm white." Anti-racist is a code word for anti-white.
And you can do it either way. The old rule that you will hear someone like Bob use for consistent messages is, if you want to tweak it, just make sure it works. As long as it works, it's fine.
Well, and you know, there's a lot of thought that's gone into philosophy behind, like, say, the white nationalists, or, you know, books have been written and theories and everything like that.
Yeah, that's why I'm always asked, Horace, what would you do if you actually – if you guys bring the whole thing down, aren't you worried about what to do next and everything else? I say, I don't even worry about that, because we have thousands of books saying that.
You know what I always say, man? And I've said this to Derek Black, and I said, you know, my job is – you know, I'm here because, as Bob Whitaker said, when you can't breathe, the only thing that matters is getting air. And that's the reason why I'm here. And as soon as we can start getting air, I'm out of here, man. I'm going to gardening and pursuing my hobbies, and I'll let the geniuses take over and run society. You know? But
I don't know. That's part of the problem now, is letting the geniuses. You need the Chuck Roys in there too.
Yeah, but
the so-called geniuses. But yeah, I don't worry about that. It's like, well, Horace, what happened if everything collapsed and there was a big race war? That's the least of my concerns.
Yeah.
Everyone's been so ready for that type of scenario for eons. That's not a concern of ours. We just keep on trucking.
That's right. And, you know, I kind of have my doubts about the race war scenario, just because the fact that our enemies are internal, you know.
Well, right.
And that's one of the talking points I had to the audience.
They're just using these as weapons against us, you know, who knows.
Right. And obviously in any sort of conflict, our people generally have the upper hand for a variety of reasons.
And all the weapons.
Right. But, you know, that was – I'll have to repeat this on the show here, because this is one of the talking points I had the audience go over and repeat three times, which is, I said, you know, our enemy looks like us but has no loyalty to us. Our enemy looks like us but has no loyalty to us, because I think we're
yeah, that's why I came up with the pink rabbits. You know, I mean, it doesn't matter. You know, there are so many different anti-white elements within our race. The Jews are the famous one. They're the most anti-white whites in the history of anti-white whites, and that's saying something. But there are many other elements that are anti. I just lump them all in one category in the show. I call them pink rabbits. But yeah, that our enemy always looks like us. Now, I mean, not all Jews necessarily look like us, but when you get into European Jewry, the famous Tim Weiss, you know, Tim Weiss is part Jewish, but he's the biggest, one of the biggest anti-white elements in America. But, you know, he pretty much, people walk down the street, he writes books white like me, he passes himself off as white to our people all day long. You know, that's the type of thing we're dealing with. People that look like us, that have no loyalty to us, and there's a whole cadre of whites out there selling us out.
Yeah, yeah.
All feeding at the anti-white trough and getting rich at it.
Yeah, which that's another factor too. You know, there was some
rich off our death. How wonderful is that?
And you know, of course, for many decades, the opposition has dedicated their business resources and everything that they've had towards funding their agenda. Whereas a lot
they take their politics very, very seriously.
And it's time that we take our politics seriously. I mean, sure. If you're, I know a lot of your audience, it comes from, you know, the
50-50.
Yeah, 50. But you know, if you happen to be an old standard conservative who's listening to this podcast right now, I know a lot of the old time conservatives kind of separated their business interests from their political interests. And I think it's time that we stop doing that. There was a couple guys, one guy in particular, who really made that conference possible. He has some money, and he put his money where his mouth was and made it happen. And it's going to take people like – you know, I like to think of us as a team. We're all specialists in a certain way. And if you were in the building at that conference, you would see clearly you had your security guys. Clearly you had your your David Dukes and the sort of speakers. And then you had these other guys in the background there who funded the event. And you had – everybody was playing their role, and there were no real weak links in that chain. And our race naturally is a race of specialists. And so, you know, you as a listener just need to find your role. You don't have to do everything. You just have to be part of that team.
Yeah, you got to start somewhere simple. You got to start simple. It's always the simple things and repetition of the simple basics over and over again that work. It's not the big things. If you do that, big things will start happening. Well, they just start happening, you know.
You know, lately
it's simple things.
Lately, I've been talking to a lot of people in my area, and I think it's no matter where you go right now, people are understanding that something big is going to happen in the next 10 years there. And most people, are white people anywhere, are under the impression that things are going to get tough economically. There'll probably be a lot of social unrest, and people have asked me, well, what should we do in that sort of scenario? And I give them an answer that I stole from you. And I say, this works no matter whether you're in good times or bad times. You stick with the basics. You network and you stay on a consistent message. And if you do those two things.
Yeah, our race has survived more tough times than anyone else on earth, and they actually thrive through them. Our race right now, our race in North America would probably be the last. Most, if there was a food shortage, our race, you know, there's probably the average white listener, even if you're dirt poor, you probably have all kinds of food in your house.
Oh, but, you know, people are stuck. I mean, it's just even in good times, our people.
It's amazing how our race does abundance so well that there's nothing to ever be afraid of, and always be leery of someone trying to scare you to death.
Yeah, although.
But we have to take action. You can't, you know, a lot of us like to sit on the defensive, and a good defensive tactic is growing a big garden or having a big family. These are all defensive tactics. They make sense. They're definitely something to do. You know, we need more white babies, all that kind of good stuff. But you eventually got to go on offense or the enemy will just bleed you to death. And we have to be on offense in America, and that has to happen in this type of system with a consistent message.
Yeah, and also networking. You know, that's the other basic that you put in there. And that is being on the offensive as well. We are sort of people that tend to be self-reliant, and sometimes that can tend to make us want to move away from the problem and hide out in the woods and have a garden. But networking is so key. You know, a lot of times on Stormfront, you'll run across people who think that Jews can leap tall buildings in a single bound and they're evil geniuses. And as you point out, they really stick to the basics. They network very, very effectively. They have an in-group, out-group dynamic. And so basically they network within that in-group, and they have a consistent message, which is we are victims.
Yeah, that means they take their politics seriously. That's what – when you know, you will never see a rich communist – let's say a rich communist Jew. He would be – I mean, a rich one would be obligated. Morally obligated to to marry this daughter into the most promising poor communist Jew. That's how they do stuff like that. That's people that take their politics seriously, like the communists always did stuff like that. You know, they consistently look to support their own. And that's starting to happen among our particular groups. I was pleasantly surprised. A lot of different people wanted to know who my artist was and if they could hire him for different things. And I said, yes, you know, if you check out, okay, I'll give you his contact info, you know, but that's good. That's good. We should be hiring internally.
Right. And
our paleo conservative, I don't care what they, white normal, the group of white normal people that we operate in is big enough, large enough, we could do whatever we want to do.
Right. And you know, if you are a guy out there that has some money, you know, there's people like James Edwards that are basically risking the livelihood and everything to make this almost into a full-time profession. And, you know, if we're going to
Don and Derek Black Show, sure, and James Edwards Political Cesspool are the only white and normal populist conservative radio shows in the history in a long time in America that actually talk about conserving something like white people.
Right. And
so that's something important. You got to have that AM radio. You can actually reach, you know, tons of people, but it's also very expensive to do. It's not.
No, it's not cheap. But, you know, I think there's been a lot of guys with money on the sidelines that have been waiting for something to work, because rich guys don't put their money into stuff that doesn't work. They didn't get rich by doing that. And, you know,
well, no one wants to put their money into anything, any. You know, people want to bet on something that looks successful or looks sexy or something else. They don't want it.
And we're starting to see that now, you know.
No one puts money on all hope is lost.
Right.
Not really a winning proposition. It just, now, you know, I don't know. I can only imagine what would happen if you tried to sell a racehorse with the name All Hope Is Lost. You never know. Maybe it could be the fastest horse there, but it would be pretty funny. All Hope Is Lost.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that was probably one of the most encouraging things about that conference for me is to feel the energy, especially, you know, finishing it up the way we did, coming out of there and going over to the restaurant. And, you could feel that.
Yeah, there was no All Hope Is Lost. I didn't see that at all. I mean, from any of the speakers, they all gave their ideals. I didn't see anything remotely approaching anything negative or anything like that, which is kind of pointless if you're white.
Well, I think
nothing to be negative about if you're white.
I think one of the lines from your little talk that's probably stuck in a lot of people's heads was, if you're white, hope is lost. You know, hope is never lost for you if you're white. You know, it really doesn't matter what the situation is. You're always holding the cards if you have those genetics.
Yeah, if you want to play the cards, you can play them, but you got to play them in the game. If the game's what the game is going is practical politics. I mean, you got to play the game in front of you. What I call in the podcast, I call it baseball. You know, a lot of people geared up for basketball want to play basketball, but guess what? It ain't going.
Right.
If the game basketball is doing something is it preparing for Rojava or something violent, that it may never work the way you think it's going to work. It seldom does. It seldom does, but you got to just stick with the basics and doing the simple things over and over again. And one thing we're trying to do is I was happy to see another 10 members on Bugs. Before I left, it was like 45 or somewhere in the high 40s. Now it's 55. So we're adding to Bugs Swarm, and we're trying to repeat our growth, not quite the same as over the past 2 years where we came from probably a half dozen to 55. We want Bugs Swarm all the way up to 300 to, and that's whitakeronline.org/blog. You can hit it. You'll see a Bug Swarm. It's a place where you can post the mantra and report it.
Yeah, basically at Bug Swarm, what they're doing is they're turning up the volume on the message, and as the volume increases, it starts resonating. It's on the right frequency, and as the volume increases, it's starting to punch through the system, punch through the noise. So if you want to be part of that solution, you can go ahead and go on Bug Swarm, and you know, just look around at what people are doing, and you can see it's pretty self-explanatory there.
We have something simple for anyone to do, and it doesn't take anything other than running your mouth or copy and pasting. That's all it takes. That's all it takes, and this stuff just starts filtering up through the system. We're seeing terms like – phrases like – our terminology, which is so critical, words like anti-white, these phrases come out over and over again all across the West. And it's funny how this stuff goes mainstream once you start seeding it into the – once you start seeding the memes into the larger population. And if you – if you impose terminology, if you can put your terminology into the population, you can put your ideology into the population. And our ideology is the most feared thing in the Western world. It's so feared it's not being practiced. It's white and normal.
I love that line. What are you, a racist, a white supremacist? No, I'm the scariest thing this planet's ever seen. I'm white and normal. Now, We've got about 30 seconds left, a minute left here. What can we expect in your upcoming podcast coming out on the site here?
Well, we've moved the site in the past week. No one even noticed, but we moved the site under the gun, and I'm on a whole new server arrangement where it can really be expanded aggressively if we need to. And we are coming out with the members only areas installed, and in-game Exotica and Candied Carrots are starting. So you're going to hear me with a greater frequency on a short-term basis, both free, and there's going to be a subscription service that's like $9.99 a month or something like that. But you're going to hear me with a greater frequency, and the podcast is probably going to go all practical politics. And they're going to be short pieces. I'm going to do short pieces for the members only free area. Starting probably, hopefully in the next week they'll start, and they'll be every day. And there's going to be on geopolitics on one short politic podcast, and there's going to be another short podcast for alternative news and research. So what I've got is three audiences. I've got some that just listen to our shows and stuff like that, Truck, for practical politics. I've got some that just listen to alternative news and research, and I've got a big audience that's somewhat combined that wants geopolitics. And I'm going to give them all – everyone gets what they want.
It's a buffet. All right.
And so that's what we're doing. We're basically busy working on that tonight.
Excellent. Well, we're out of time here, so this has been Truck Roy with Horace here. And until next time, walk tall, stay proud, and don't give them an inch.